Welcome to Arlington Church of the Brethren.
Christ be in my mind and in my thinking. Christ be in my eyes, in everything I see. Christ be in my ears and in my hearing. Christ be in my mouth, in every word I speak.
Well, the woman who touched Jesus' garment, the woman who is healed by touching the hem of Jesus' robe, the story goes by a few references, casually, socially. Thank you, Sister Marcia and Amy, for reading this passage to us today. But we heard clearly, didn't we? The story is not a standalone story about the woman's healing. It's also a story about, and in fact begins, with a man named Jairus. Jairus was a leader at the local synagogue. According to the online Bible notes for the New English Translation, Jairus was, quote, the main elder at the synagogue in charge of organizing the services. Now think about the culture and the Jewish culture at the time. Now imagine the main elder at the synagogue in charge of organizing services. Sounds like kind of a big deal, doesn't it? You know, we want to know as humans that who we are, the extraordinary work and effort we put forward, will equate to the kind of treatment we get. So maybe it's not surprising that Jairus got some special treatment in this story. I mean, heck, his daughter's life was at stake. So if his life at the temple helped him gain an audience with Jesus, or if he relied on his stature in the community, financially, socially, from his important position, to help him gain an audience with the one who might help him save his daughter, then good for him, right? For availing himself of everything at his disposal to help save his daughter's life with family at stake, would any of us do different? So we read in verse 41, Jairus asks Jesus to travel to his house and intervene to save his dying daughter. Amazing he got the audience. Amazing he got to make his impassioned plea to Jesus. And Jesus agrees. Thank the Lord. In this case, literally. Thank the Lord, he's going to go save his daughter. Now, judged only by verse 41 and 42, this is a story about Jairus' healing. Jairus' daughter's healing, more specifically. This is a man requesting that Jesus go heal a woman. And then, verse 43, a new element to the story. A woman with a bleeding issue. Someone in the crowd, one of many. Now, woman with a bleeding issue. The specifics aren't named in the text. We can't say specifically what the issue is, but generally we kind of get it, right? You're not going to make me get into that from the pulpit. It's a woman with some kind of bleeding issue, above and beyond normal health, for 12 years. Now the plot line of the story happens quickly. Verse 41. Jairus pleads with Jesus directly to visit his house. Verse 42, Jesus travels with Jairus to his house. And as they traveled, a crowd was so big that, as the online notes indicate, the crowd was so big even breathing would have been difficult. Imagine the crowd big enough for that. That's verse 42. Verse 43, quote, "Now a woman was there who had been suffering for 12 years. Verse 44, quoting again, "She touches the edge of his cloak and is healed." The plot happens quick. From the point of view of Jairus, who begins the story in verse 41, this woman's healing interrupts the healing of his daughter. Or at least I consider that might be how Jairus would describe it. Now, we cannot understand the story without understanding that point of view. But now let's look deeper into the woman's story. Imagine it, if you can, some kind of chronic issue specific to being a woman. Now, men, I want you to imagine this too. I have faith in you. You can do it. Some kind of issue with bleeding. Imagine the sheer logistics or pain of trying to visit with friends or go to the marketplace. And 12 years later, financially, you're broke. You've exhausted all your resources, spent it all on doctors. Socially, forget it. First of all, socially, tough to get out and engage in normal society with whatever kind of disorder of bleeding she had for 12 years. Second of all, culture at this point in time stigmatized normal female experiences like menstruation. She would have been considered ritually unclean. Now, for most women, this is an inconvenient thing. A couple days a month, they were ritually unclean. This woman had been ritually unclean every day for 12 years. This would have limited her ability to interact with the larger Jewish community. This mainstream religious value would have pushed her experience as a human to the fringes of community life, if she even existed in community life at all. And so, financially broke, medically all options exhausted, socially likely all but abandoned by those in her own religion. But she heard Jesus was in town. There had been rumors of him healing people, stories told from person to person. And so, with nothing else to lose, she desperately finds her way through the crowd, a crowd so dense it's difficult to breathe. And she finds her way to Jesus. Now, she didn't have the privilege, like Jairus, of getting an audience. So she does all she can think to do. She works her way through the crowd, and when she gets there, she just reaches out and just touches his cloak. It's all she can manage. But it's enough. And in that moment, she is healed. A woman of no privilege reached out directly and got her healing from Jesus. Can we blame her? Would any of us acted differently? And yet I wonder if she had the chance to approach the disciples, what would they have said? "Brother Peter, I have an issue of blood for 12 years. May I speak with Jesus?" I imagine that she might have heard, "Oh, no, we're very busy today. We're already on the way to go heal Jairus' daughter. You might note all the crowds around. Today is not the day for such a request. I care about you. Your story matters, but there's no room at this inn." But the woman was desperate and was having none of it. She didn't have the patience. She didn't have the privilege of an audience with Jesus. She just reached out and touched Jesus herself directly. I'm confident that women in history can relate to this story. See, those with a seat at the table don't just generally make room for new people. Women throughout history have been reaching out and touching their healing directly for as far back as our American history and longer. For example, the right to vote was not just given to women. They demanded it. Some of your mothers, if not some of you, were born into an America where they could not vote. Think about that. It's not that long ago. Heck, let's give another example. If you're in church, in this church, and older than me, there's a solid chance that you yourself were born into an America that didn't allow people of color to vote. We have a mainstream presidential candidate who remembers segregated schools, was a part of even the second class to be bused to a school of mixed race. This history is not long ago. We are not so far removed from it to think we've healed and grown from everything. Well, this is the arc of moral justice. Those with a seat at the table don't just make room for new people. The arc of history does not just bend towards justice naturally. It has to be bent towards justice. There have to be people of faith bending it that way. Much like the suffragettes and civil rights protesters who said, "Not later, but now." We are here, we are visible, hear our stories. Much like the plight of the woman in our biblical story this morning, who did all she could to help herself. She made her way through the crowd, she reached out, she touched Jesus for herself. A woman touching Jesus directly got her healing. Amen? And you know, we ended the story on a pleasant note that we heard twice. We ended on the fun verse. "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Anyone know what the next verse says? The one we didn't read? Jairus receives word that his daughter has died. Now, we don't know when she died in the story. We just know that right after the detour with this woman, word has spread that your daughter, Jairus, has passed. And this puts voice to the greatest fear of people with privilege sitting at the table already, that making room for others might damage ourselves. In verse 49, Jairus is told his daughter has died. Thankfully, verse 50 continues the story, and Jesus says, quote, in a paraphrase, quote, "Jesus, don't you worry either. Have faith, all will be well." And as you keep reading the story in verse 55, Jairus' daughter is healed too. A subtle message of the story: if we trust in Jesus the Christ, if we cry out, "Son of David, have mercy on me," Jesus will heal us. And if we make room for others at the table, if we make room for the healing of others, there will still be space for our healing, for us. In allowing others' voices to speak, our voice will still be heard by a God who hears every voice. And so the message this morning is twofold. If you are not at the table, if you need a healing and no one is offering you the space to get it, there is an example for you in this story. Don't wait. Maybe the story of this woman is a model and inspiration. Reach out yourself. Go through the crowd yourself and touch the healing you need. God is available to everyone. We don't always have to wait for an invitation. And second, if you are at the table, invite the ones just waiting for an invitation to come. And maybe they've given up asking because their requests fell on deaf ears. So be the one who says, I see you. I hear you. I will be your audience. There is space for you at our table. An understated part of this story, verse 47, I'm going to read from the New Living Translation now, the NLT, may our ears hear it freshly. When the woman realized that she could not stay hidden, she began to tremble and fell to her knees in front of him. The whole crowd heard her explain why she had touched him and that she had been immediately healed. The woman realized she could not stay hidden. So with trembling, falling to her knees, she told her story. And as we just heard, quoting again, the whole crowd heard her explain. I can't help but wonder how many people in 12 years ever heard this woman's story. And here in verse 12, it says clearly, the whole crowd heard her story. Part of her healing was in the ability to finally have people listen to her story. She'd probably been trying to tell it for years. The difference isn't her telling it or not. The difference is people finally heard it, saw who she was. I'm going to change gears a little bit. A couple years ago, I committed myself to hearing stories better. And so I thought to myself, how do I put myself in a position to hear more stories? Because, you know, you can't just walk up to people different than you and be like, hi, I see that you're black. Can you tell me what it's like to be black in America? That does not work, right? So I thought, how do I put myself in a position to hear more stories? There's a number of options, but one I've availed myself of well is social media. Just this week, I've added more people of color into my timeline who talk about issues of racial inequality and justice. Now, a couple years ago, when I first made this commitment to myself, I decided to find, and I did find, a few trans activists to follow on social media, just to learn more about the trans experience. I found one in particular I've grown to respect and appreciate. And I found in the early days of following them that they posted an awful lot about one thing in particular. Food. Food. And I thought to myself, excuse me, trans activist person, I followed you to learn more about being trans and you keep talking about food. I actually thought in my head for like 30 seconds, I thought, you know, maybe I should find a trans activist who is more transy. That was a thought in my head. I had to realize, it took me all of 30 seconds, but I had to process this. I had to realize in my own head that, you know, being trans or being an activist, it's just two small parts of the totality of who this human is. among other roles and hobbies and joys and pains they feel and experience. They like food. You know what? So do I. We have to let people tell their stories on their terms. And even if that story ends up being a story about food or how they woke up late this morning, it's good for us to realize and continue to remember that the fullness of their human experience is part of their story. Well, books can be another way. Just this week, a pastor friend of mine was telling me how at one point in his life, several years ago, someone of color asked who the authors of the books he was reading were. Well, he went home and looked and realized most of them were white. So he's been intentional since about reading more books from authors of color. These books aren't even always about racial issues, but you're putting yourself in a position to hear new stories and be presented with new and different points of view. There's articles online, there are TED Talks, there are dozens, hundreds of ways to do this. If you want to be really radical, some of us have gone on trips just to listen to new stories. If you're not sure how best to hear stories, let's get together this week and talk. But my sermon message this morning is this: listen. Find stories different than your own to listen to. And listening to stories is hard. There's a temptation you feel inside sometimes. I still feel it. To be judgmental of something we don't understand or get defensive about our own life. And my encouragement, don't. We need to find a listening mode where we listen. The call is merely to listen and to listen, to learn, and to have our understandings expanded. We don't even have to agree. We just have to realize their experience is valid and human. And then, if you're willing, amplify that story. Tell someone else's story sometimes. And when possible, give that person space for them to tell their own story in a room they might not normally get to tell it in. Well, at annual conference, we just sat around tables and we spent a lot of energy trying to some extent to get conservatives and progressives to listen to each other. The listening concept again, right? And I'm glad to have progressives and conservatives of the church listen to each other better. But at annual conference in this room, at these tables, every minute I was there, I just kept thinking, but who isn't even at this table? Who isn't here to be a part of the conversation or to have their story told? So hear me clearly. We all need to understand and listen to each other's stories. Brethren to UCC, black to people of color, to white people, straight to LGBTQ, whatever spectrum you want to kind of put on here. Everyone needs to listen to each other's stories. I will say that clearly. But we also need to understand the dynamics of power and of history, of who more readily and naturally sits at the table, of whose stories get told more commonly. And then we need to make the extra effort to add in the voices or listen to the voices less present, more easily ignored. My friends, as, you know, inclusive progressive people who want to extend the table to include those too often left out, I ask you this morning, what stories do we listen to? Will we hear the story of the undocumented immigrant? will we hear the story of the separated child? Will we hear the story of the young or old trans or gender nonconforming person? Will we hear the story of those with different abilities than our own? The story of those with different sensory needs than our own? Will we hear the stories of the LGBTQ plus? If we're young, will we hear the stories of those older than us? If we're old, will you hear the stories of the young adults or the children? Men, will we hear the story of the women in our lives? Sometimes we need to follow the example Jesus set in this story, the giver of healings. And he made space, didn't he, in this story? He could have said, oh, I'm busy. I'm already doing one healing. I don't have time for the second. But he let himself be interrupted, and he offered space for someone to tell their story and have others listen. And if you are this morning to any extent in need of your own healing, emotional, spiritual, otherwise, or know someone who needs a healing, emotional, spiritual, or otherwise, follow the example of Jairus. Follow the example of the woman, that we may put our personal trust and confidence in the Lord, that he will make us well, so that we may go in peace, untroubled, undisturbed, with good well-being. And may we hear our Lord clearly say to us this morning, your faith has made you well. May we be the people whose faith makes us well and whose faith helps make others well too, so that we may all go in peace. Amen.
Christ be in my ears and in my hearing. Christ be in my mouth, in every word I speak. Christ be in my heart and in my loving. Christ be in my life, each moment that I live.